Okay, as I promised, we are having a very distinguished guest tonight, Mr. Richard Sale. He's a intelligence correspondent for UPI, and he has worked both in the Middle East and especially on Iran, he will kind of fill us in with what is left out of Seymour Hersh's article, the New Yorker piece on the coming wars. Mr. Say, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
And let's start with, my suggestion is let's give us a little understanding of what is really the role of intelligence community in this administration and how it differs from previous administration and how it's being shifted from CIA to Pentagon, if you will.
Well, regarding your last point, I mean, there's been a lot of fuss about the transfer of power basically from the CIA to the Pentagon and the DIA, but this has always occurred during wartime. If you recall, President Roosevelt conducted World War II through his Joint Chiefs of Staff and utterly basically put aside the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, and the State Department. So there are precedents for this. The same thing happened in Vietnam. The CIA began with a very vigorous role there then and was overtaken by the military. So this is not a particular conspiracy of any kind.
Okay, so I guess the reason I asked this question is Hersh kind of put some space in his article explaining why these changes are happening, and he quotes some of the intelligence officers or actually high officers in CIA who are not happy with this kind of putting control on their defense, stating that, for example, there is some delicacy in operation when it's happening under CIA, whereas when it's under military. What would be the difference between these two approach?
Well, I would say that the CIA, unlike the Pentagon, does not use, does not burn the blanket to kill a flea or use a mountain battery to kill a gnat. I would agree entirely that the CIA has a much greater delicacy of touch and probably a greater sense of the ramifications, policy ramifications, and also a greater understanding of the countries that are involved than does the Pentagon. I think the Pentagon is enormously skilled at some things, but the FBI and the CIA also have enormous experience in certain areas that the Pentagon is too arrogant to draw on.
Okay, now if you want to go into the details of what the plan is, could you tell us a little bit about, we know for some certainty that there are some operations, at least in a intelligence gathering phase. Can you elaborate more on where these things are happening and which countries are targets?
Well, no, that's absolutely correct. Iran has become a target. There is no doubt about that. There have been intrusions made into Iranian airspace by U.S. aircraft. As a matter of fact, the head of the Iranian Air Force said that such aircraft would be shot down. This is not particularly unusual, actually. If you remember the shoot-down of the electronic signals-gathering aircraft back in 2001, I believe, in April. We do this all the time. We did this during the Cold War. We used to send flights of nuclear bombers directed at the Soviet Union. They would fly into Soviet territory, and the purpose was to have the Soviets light up their air defense networks, and we would build a database so that in time of war we could go back in and take them out. The Soviets did the same thing with us. They would put bombers in over our Alaskan territory and other U.S. Possessions, and we would react in the same way. It's not a particularly risky game unless a country like Iran conceives of it as an act of war. And the real danger here is that Iran would shoot down an aircraft or take a pilot prisoner, which would be terribly embarrassing for the United States.
As far as the scenarios that being considered to deal with Iran, what are the options that the administration has, in your opinion?
I don't think they will go to the military one. I think that actually, thanks to, first of all, I would like to say that Cy Hirsch is a friend of mine, and I also talk to people who are aware, you know the facts as well as he does, and I talked to a four-star general, a former commander of CENTCOM, who told me that Cy Hirsch's piece was correct. There are findings within the administration that target Iran. I think that the administration is softening its line because of public criticism, and I think it will do everything in its power diplomatically to squeeze Iran to drop its nuclear program. The thought goes like this, and it's very much aligned with Israeli strategic thought. Israel enjoys a nuclear monopoly in the Middle East. It does not want to give it up under any circumstances. The United States agrees with Israel that atomic ayatollahs would not be acceptable. And the policy then derives from that. What should be done? There are plenty of things that can be done diplomatically. There can be international sanctions that would be sanctioned by the UN, not just unilaterally imposed by the United States, which are never effective because everybody grows tired of them, and they don't get enforced, and then people look around for ways to make money. So sanctions unilaterally imposed are a failure. I think that the United States could go to a policy of seizing ships that they felt carried radioactive or materials that could contribute to Iran's program, but that would be a much more drastic step. I think for the moment the United States is actually searching to try and find a consensus among its allies as to what to do about Iran.
You mentioned the allies. There are some, like, political discussions and negotiations between European Union and Iranian. In your opinion and your knowledge of Iranian political structure, do you see that advancing at all?
I'm not positive of that. I mean, I would just say that my knowledge is at the moment is not that detailed to be able to really make a coherent statement about that. I would certainly hope so. I think it's the opinion of the intelligence community, that the spooks that I speak with, that Iran is not designing a weapon for aggressive use against the West at all. I think within the CIA, for example, there is a certain allowance made for that Iran quite justifiably does not want to remain in a secondary or inferior position when it comes to projecting its power in the region. And that there is no nation that I don't think the factor of a nation's will to status is taken into account the way it should be. I mean, there is no reason, or there is no justification for one country to just settle into a third-rate role in a region. I don't see that at all, and I think there is some sympathy for that view within the U.S. intelligence community. On the other hand, within the community, they want there to be strict verification, and you know they want the program, the details of the program, to be made known, and it, you know, it's, we're back to the trust and verify of the Reagan administration with the Soviets.
But I mean, back to the question of whether there is a program in Iranian part to really build a missile.
Well, there's a program, for sure, yes.
Yeah. And that doesn't really complete the project. There need to be some delivering system.
Absolutely.
How advanced are they in that regard?
But for Iran to have a delivery system is an extraordinarily difficult thing to do. I mean, I remember when Pakistan had its first explodable device, and I think it was the size of an 18-wheeler or something. I mean, being able to miniaturize warheads is an extraordinarily complicated process, and I don't think Iran is at the moment at all nearing that capability.
So then the question comes whether this is again a build up, kind of like a public opinion build up, the same way it happened with Iraq invasion. If the threat is not that imminent, then what would be the behind-the-scene reasons for this kind of rhetoric?
Well, I would think that there is a great program of intimidation directed against Iran. Iran is not considered to be particularly likable because of the difficulties in the past. But those difficulties are in the past. I think there's a realization among intelligent policymakers, both in the White House and in the intelligence community, that the Iranian leadership since Khomeini has not been reckless. It is not given to the kind of daring of risks, for example, and the kind of miscalculations that Saddam Hussein was prone to. The Iranian leadership, even the clerical leadership, is regarded by many as being, reasonable and being able to be as amenable to logical argument. And they are not viewed as crazy or anything else. And I think that the U.S. Approach will basically take that into consideration. And I think the demonization of Iran will stop.
Well, the follow-up of the article of Hirsch and that question is of President and Condi Rice at the Senate hearing in during her trip to the Middle East just last week, the rhetoric continued in a way like a carrot and a stick strategy. While Europeans are trying to show the carrot, U.S. is trying to show the stick. But in reality, I'm trying to put this all together and see what are the different scenarios that may happen. And I guess one of the options was an Israeli attack.
The Israelis cannot do the attack. The Israelis don't have the means to do the attack. The Israelis don't have the aircraft to do it. They have a small number, 25, of F-15I aircraft who could do it. That it would mean multiple assaults sustained over weeks. It would be impossible to perform. They have a large bunch of F-16Is, but that would involve extensive in-flight refuelings, and logistically it would probably be impossible to do. The only country that could probably successfully do a strike would be the United States. The United States, by its own admission, I mean, if you talk to the intelligence people who are doing the gathering of this information, everything depends on the quality of the intelligence, and we don't have any. I mean, we really don't. The number of supposed Iranian weapons development sites range from 13 to over 40. We don't have good intelligence. The program Iran has very, very skillfully dispersed the program, and we don't really know what it entails. And a U.S. strike would require being able to hit a very small, exact target, and we are by no means able to do that with the current information that we have.
Is there any talk of a sort of like a carpet bombing of all the infrastructure and like putting back to a Stone Age type of strategy?
No, I think Iran is regarded, and I think quite rightly, by most of the people that I talk to, intelligence people that I talk to, is absolutely one of the strategic prizes of the Middle East because of its geography, it's the way it borders the Persian Gulf, and it's large population, everything. It's got so many things going for it. There is no thought of wanting to wreck a simply wonderful country, frankly. I mean, I have lived there and have great admiration for its people. And the part of people who have never been there, I've never heard anybody speaking in terms of what I would regard as barbarism, simply causing some sort of a humanitarian disaster in Iran. No.
One question that comes up is even the American military capability at this time, and the question with extension of forces in Iraq and kind of a stretch a little bit more than it should be. Do you feel that militarily we're capable of attacking in Iran?
I don't believe we are. We are short of everything in Iraq. There are shortages that haven't even been clearly publicized. We're short in terms of artillery. Our special forces are below par. I think we're stretched very thin. And I don't think the administration is at all anxious to undertake any further military activity directed at the Islamic world. I think that Iraq has been quite enough, and I think that it's been tremendously, perplexing as well as, you know, for this administration. I mean, they have their triumph, but they also have a great many worries and a great many repercussions that they haven't really quite fathomed. So I don't think that the U.S. military is capable of doing anything like that at the moment, nor do I think that there is any plan to do that. I think that contingency plans have been updated, but that's routine and done for countries such as Britain, even. I mean, we have war plans for practically every country on the face of the earth. Just in the past 2 weeks, I would say that talking to White House officials, that the line on Iran has softened considerably from what it was earlier in the year. So I think that that's a very hopeful sign, and I think that the answer to this dilemma will have to be through truly fruitful negotiations and as you say, offering genuine carrots and not just brandishing sticks.
One question I have is, I was actually in a trip visiting some friends and relatives, the way it's being perceived, at least in Iran and in Europe, is that there are lots of investment going on from basically all over the world, except the Americans, inside the Iranian territories, in Persian Gulf, oil fields. There's a high, really a high volume of contracts between India, China, even France. They are executing a contract for building some vehicle manufacturing. It's a joint venture of Renault and Peugeot in Iran. And so they are investing a lot of money in the country. How would they react if a military option becomes inevitable as far as U.S.
goes? They would react most severely and unfavorably. They would be sharply critical and perhaps outraged, I'm sure. The United States needs to, you know, mend its bridges with Iran. I don't think that's an impossibility.
All right. Thank you, Richard. Let me open up our phone lines for listeners if they have any question. And the number here is 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. If you have any question for Richard Sale, the intelligence correspondent for UPI. And let me just play a little piece of music, and I'll be back. Richard, please just stay on.
Senin solu bulağlardan yaşıl yar bak bu dağlardan yaşıl yar bak bu dağlardan bağlarengi yanaklardan küsüyorum dudaklardan size selam getirmişem bağlarengi yanaklardan küsüyorum dudaklardan Size selam getirmişem. Katar durmalardan, yaşıl başlı sonalardan. Hey. Katar durmalardan, yaşıl başlı sonalardan. Hey. Azerbaycan diyarından, Çorum'un diyarından. Size selam getirmişem. Azerbaycan diyarından, Çorum'un diyarından. Size selam getirmişem.
Okay, welcome back. You're listening to Voices of the Middle East on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. This is Gudar Zeytidari, your host, and I am talking to Richard Sale. He's an intelligence correspondent for UPI, and we have a listener online. You're on the air.
Yeah, hello. Hi there. Good to have you here.
Well, thank you very much.
I personally feel, rightly or wrongly, that our country has gone stark raving mad, and the proof of that is that they're spending us as fast as they can into bankruptcy and poverty, that likes of which we've never seen since the 1800s. I just wondered if you agree with that at all, and if you feel like there's any way out.
Well, I don't like to get into fiscal policy because that really lies beyond my competence. I can just tell you that my reaction as a layman is, you know, being able to read a newspaper is that it's not a very, seems to me, an intelligent thing to do to drive up the deficit the way it's going. But as I say, I don't feel at ease really commenting on that.
I feel like one of the real wars is the war on the middle class, the war on the working class to drive people into poverty.
Well, see, again, I mean, you're getting into motives, and I just try to deal with evidence. I'm an intelligence correspondent, not a sociologist, so you'll have to forgive me.
Well, I appreciate your expertise, and I think I was just venting, so thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Hi.
Yes, we have another caller online. You're on the
yes.
air.
Mr. Sale, how are you this evening? Thank you for your
input. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. I was lucky enough to study in Washington in 1980, and the thing that we were focusing on then was the balance of power between Iraq and Iran.
Yes.
And I guess my question is, how do you see the balance of power shaping up in the future, and wouldn't it be in the U.S.'s interest to keep Iran weak? And I'll take my question off the air. Thanks.
Perplexing. Iran no longer is in the same mode that it was in the 1980s. It no longer is really aggressively trying to topple the regimes of the Persian Gulf states. I think the horrendous war fought by Iraq and Iran, where the United States obviously tilted toward Iraq, really, you know, stopped the impetus of that. And I think Iran is much more willing to coexist with its neighbors. Clearly, it had the main worry of Iran. I mean, according to intelligence officers that I've talked to, Iran has, since the Iran-Iraq War, has not been rearming in order to, because it was worried about Iraq. It's been rearming because it's worried about the United States. I think the United States is a psychological problem, an entity, preoccupies the minds of Iranians probably to a degree that isn't warranted. And I think a lot of this dates back to 1953, to the coup there. It's also forgotten that the CIA helped to put Mossadegh into power as well as, you know, take him out. But it's hard to keep a country like Iran weak when it has the resources and the population that it does. I think it at some point has to take some sort of a place in the order there.
We have another caller on the line.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the air.
Thank you. My question was about something that your guest mentioned earlier about Israel.
Yes, that would be me.
Israel's inability to act as a surrogate for an attack.
Yes.
And also tying into the other comment you made about wanting to maintain Iran as a prize in the Middle East and there would be no carpet bombing. And my question is, isn't the issue with Iran simply its development of nuclear weapons facilities, and aren't those like singular sites that could be targeted? And just as in 1981, couldn't Israel pull that off, as it did in Iraq?
Israel had very specific intelligence in 1981 and was able to do it. The target was within their reach. To reach targets in Iran, Israel air forces would have to fly over 1,000 miles and perhaps longer to each of these sites. The other disturbing question is we don't know what is in the sites. We don't know how many are dummies and decoys. Iranians are very expert at camouflage, just as most people are, most nations are. And it's futile to stage any sort of a strike and then provoke a world reaction when you're not able to accomplish your aim. So I think that is one element that is certainly the intelligence analysts are stressing.
Indeed, yeah, I follow that. But aren't some of the sites, and wouldn't a strike at some of the sites like the Bushehr plant be symbolic and be in line with what the Bush administration would want to, in terms of sending a message to Iran?
Well, there's a scenario for that. I mean, you could do that, but then what happens then? I mean, Iran will have to retaliate in order to save face, and it probably would only retaliate indirectly through Hezbollah and things like that. It doesn't strike me as accomplishing its aim. I mean, if you make a, I don't think you use a, you make a preemptive strike on another sovereign country as a gesture. I think that's an extraordinarily reckless policy.
Well, but I think this is somewhat of a reckless administration. My last question, then I'll get off the line, would be, if you don't think that an attack is likely, at what point is there an equilibrium between Iranian behavior and the way the United States manages that? What is the benchmark at which the United States will be satisfied? And thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you. I think that if there was a sudden surge of Iranian-sponsored terrorism against U.S. interests or something like that, I think the attitude of the United States would harden extraordinarily quickly. But that has not been the case, and not since the Khobar Tower stuff back in 1996. There seems to be an easing in that area, and certainly there are real consequences to be faced should we do any sort of strike, because Iran has a very large presence in Iraq and could destabilize Iraq with, I think, enormous rapidity. And I think there are a whole lot of regional considerations that have to be kept in mind before we would do something so drastic and so really offensive, I think, and provocative to the Islamic and Arab world as a stage of nuclear strike.
We have one more caller online. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I'm fascinated by your talk tonight. A couple of comments. You had mentioned that tonight I heard that other corporations in other countries are investing heavily in the area there. And then just recently, two or three days ago, on KBOO, on their news hour, they mentioned that Halliburton and GE, General Electric, are pulling out of Iran. I'm wondering if those two places and the interests of America and the intelligence agency, if they know something that we don't know, if you could speak to that.
If they do, I don't know it either. I mean, it strikes me as most U.S. companies are situated in places and are used as intelligence gathering agencies. And I find that sort of extraordinary that Halliburton would pull out. And I do not know the reasons for it, so I'm sorry that I can't answer your question properly.
I think the Halliburton subsidiary, who is they're actually based in the United Arab Emirates. They were invited to a bid for for the South Pars gas reservoir in Persian Gulf, and they were very favorite of Iranian government. We have another caller. You're on the air, sir.
Yeah, I remember reading not long ago that Iran has some state-of-the-art anti-ship missiles and that if they were attacked, they could easily disrupt shipping in the Persian Gulf. Is that true?
That's true. They have them before. They have silkworms, but we also have Grumman Prowler aircraft that can jam them.
These are called the sunburst or something like that.
Yes, yeah, that's an updated version, I believe. But they have good anti-ship missile capability. But if they did that, I mean, it would be very easy then to strike targets around the head of the Persian Gulf and close down Iran's oil economy very quickly. So, I mean, it would be a very dangerous thing for them to do.
But if they were attacked already, then they might say, well, why not? I don't know.
I mean, I spoke to a very former senior CIA official not long ago, and he said, if it comes to real hostilities, that we could take out Iran in an hour. I mean, we know where all of its public buildings are. We know where all of its intelligence headquarters are. We know where all the installations for the Iranian Revolutionary Guard are. I mean, it would not be, that's been plotted and replotted many, many times. So, if Iran did that, I don't think it would come out of that sort of a skirmish very well at all.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you.
Well, the number here is 503-231-8187. I'm speaking with Richard Sale. He's the UPI intelligence correspondent, and we were talking about the administration programs for... Okay, I'm sorry. Trying to manage the board here, and it was very interesting, actually, Richard. I never had so many phone calls coming in at the same time. Looks like either everybody's so interested in Iran or everybody wants to, and what's another game? For like final words, Richard, if you want to share your thought with us, otherwise...
My final words would be that we would settle this question diplomatically. That the United States and Iran hopefully will be able to find areas of agreement. And I think that any premature military action or any military action that is not based on, as you say, an imminent threat. Would be uselessly provoking and retarding, and should not be done, period.
And I guess the question is, it would not help eventual program for building democracy in the Middle East if it's really something that's in mind of the administration. Isn't that true?
Not in the least. I'm sure it would refrigerate those reformers in Iran that look upon the United States favorably. But I think there are a great majority of the Iranian people who look upon the United States favorably, and I just think that to antagonize public opinion in Iran by another military action in the area is as I say, just uselessly provocative.
Well, thank you very much, Richard Sale, I hope we can talk to you again in the future, and hope these scenarios are not happening.
Yes, well, same here, and I very much appreciate you having me on. It's been an honor.